Okay, so what makes a good idea? Of course, you have plenty of good ideas. You know you do. But what's the definition of a good idea? That's a question our partners over at the New York Times have been asking themselves and compiling this weekend's magazine. On Sunday, you can read their answers in the Time Magazine's 9th annual Year in Ideas issue, packed with some of the brightest ideas to be produced this year. Joining us with a preview of Sunday's feature is Chris Solentrop, staff editor at the New York Times Magazine. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Chris, you've edited lots of the ideas. You're here in the studio, and you're going to tell us about some of these. We're going to go over some of these bright ideas, but first, that sounds weird, the definition of a good idea. What is a good idea?
Well, to us, we're just looking for ideas from 2009, which means they were either discovered in 2009 or they manifested themselves this year in some interesting way. And to us, it's just the most, not necessarily the most
important. I had lots of ideas in 2009. They weren't all good, I can tell you that.
You know, and maybe these aren't all good, but they're interesting. They're not even necessarily the most important. Just interesting, clever, funny, silly, weird, and some are important.
All right, well, let's see if this fits in. We want to play a little bit of sound here of one of the good ideas from the New York Times Ideas 2009 issue. All right, now that is the sound of an American gas guzzler. It sounds
that needs a tune-up. Is
spewing out soot and carbon emissions. Why does that sound represent a good idea?
Well, the government did a study and found that hybrid cars are so quiet that they are more likely to hit pedestrians and bicyclists. And so, manufacturers are now starting to put fake car noise into the hybrid and electric cars so that people can hear them when they're coming around the corner.
See, now, I've always thought that you could do like a ringtone kind of thing. You know how you can customize your ringtones? They should have a downloadable ringtone application for hybrid cars. You could choose, you know, which sound you wanted your car to make. Now, we have a hybrid in the family, and as soon as I can download it, this is the one I want. Jetsons. What do you think?
That would be terrific. And the advantage then is you would also get the status of having a hybrid because your car would not make the noise you'd heard earlier, but
right.
A futuristic high-tech noise.
Futuristic Jetsons-like noise.
Exactly.
I mean, I could think of lots of noises I'd like my car to. Maybe galloping hooves on the way around
that
the parking lot.
That would be fantastic.
All right. I want to listen to another piece of sound now for the next bright idea that the New York Times has identified. All right, the music that can bore into your brain if you let it. That's from the classic Game Boy game Tetris. It's about 20 years old, that game. It's not new, but what's the bright idea around this?
A group of researchers studied whether playing Tetris could help possibly prevent post-traumatic stress disorder. So they played a really horrific video to a group of people that had drownings and a car accident and horrific imagery, the kind that would cause flashbacks. And then a group of people sat around and did nothing after it. And another group of people, after a 40-minute pause, played Tetris. And the group that played Tetris experienced significantly fewer flashbacks over the next week than the non-Tetris group. So the idea is, and they're not totally sold on it, but they're investigating the idea of Tetris as a preventive treatment, playing Tetris as a preventive treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Maybe it is. Now, we don't know if this is specific to Tetris and the dynamics of the game or if it's just any Game Boy or any handheld video game.
That's true, though the study did involve Tetris, and it's heavily visual, and it presumably affects how the flashbacks are encoded on the visual memory of the brain.
All right, now we promised people before some zombies, and I don't want to disappoint them, so give this a listen.
The more I see of the world, the more I am dissatisfied with it, and every zombie confirms my belief that God has abandoned us as punishment for the evils of people such as Miss Bingley.
All right, not zombies per se, but a wonderful British accent describing them. Why is mashing up zombies with Jane Austen a good idea?
The surprise bestseller of the year is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is a book that is about 85% Jane Austen and about 15% zombies.
That's just the ratio, 85-15.
That's my understanding.
It's a great book. It's really entertaining.
And just, you know, you take a book that's in the public domain, you add a sprinkling of zombies in zombie-appropriate locations, and you've got a new intellectual property that you can sell.
Okay, so that's lots of fun. Some of these ideas are in the far more serious realm. You guys identify social networks as foreign policy. Earlier this year, I guess in the spring, with the Green Revolution, the Iranian uprising against the government in Iran, Twitter, YouTube, social networking played such an important role. And you guys have identified that.
Yes. I mean, the interesting thing here is that the the State Department, our government, has decided that social networks are just an inherent good, that unlike, say, Radio Free Europe, where you would broadcast actual information about freedom and liberty to communist countries, just the mere existence of person-to-person technological communication in tyrannical countries can promote freedom. This is the operating principle of the State Department.
State Department latching onto social network. And we want to get to as many of these as possible because they're fascinating. Now, Celeste, you've got a young son. How often, I don't know if there's a number for this, how often does he smile? Does he smile a lot?
Pretty much all the time.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, you are in luck, and so is your son, Grant. You've got a study here on predictive smiling?
Yes. Researchers took college yearbook smiles and also smiles from people as young as 10, and the people who were the brightest, most intense smilers were something like 5 times less likely to divorce than the people who smiled the least in their photos. Oh, and these are candid photos, posed photos, a whole group of them.
And they did gradations of smile width. How do you do
this?
Yes,
people, they had people code the intensity of the smile having to do with their eye movements, muscle movements. So there are, I mean, there's some subjective, I suppose, coding, but there's, you know, it's...
Was there any research on the little boys that make zombie faces? Because I get that, too.
Maybe that's for 2010.
More likely to read Jane Austen, apparently. I think that's Grant's future there. All right, Chris Sullentrop, story editor of the New York Times Magazine. They've got a feature this Sunday on the best, brightest ideas of 2009. Sounds for hybrid cars that are too silent. Jane Austen and zombies and social networking in Iran. You can read all about it.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.